This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Unwired LA and California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Morley Winograd, who is the chair of the Wi-Fi and Beyond executive panel here in Los Angeles. Welcome back to California Politics Today and Unwired LA.
Well, it's not only nice to be back, but it's nice to be able to be back and say that we delivered. Before we talked, we were thinking about a report. Now we have a report.
Right. Now that's what we're going to talk about. What was the charge that you got from the mayor to accomplish in this report?
The mayor wanted us to lay out a vision and a overall guidance for policymakers on how to make L.A. a completely wired and easy-to-use broadband city. He said he wanted to make sure that the report addressed issues of using the technology to help close the digital divide, to improve economic development in L.A., and to improve city's government performance. And so that's what we did.
And you've addressed all those issues here.
Right.
Why don't we talk a little bit about the models that you've elaborated on in the report, ranging from, I guess, government takeover to government do-nothingism.
Right. Well, the big debate in this world today is in fact about what role, if any, city should play in the deployment of these new wireless broadband technologies.
Right.
There's been quite a bit of political controversy from incumbent providers suggesting that they didn't think it was a proper role for municipal government use of taxpayer dollars. There's an equally strong advocacy on the other side suggesting that wireless access would be just as fundamental to people's lives as electricity and water were 100 years ago and still are today.
Right, and therefore ought to be...
And therefore we ought to have DWPB, I guess, Department of Water, Power, and Broadband.
Right.
And we had all of those tensions within the panel. We had the incumbent service providers on the panel. We had some of the city folks, including DWP, there. We therefore tried to lower the level of the emotion of the debate to focus on some criteria on how you would think about a city's role. Everybody could agree that that we ought to have affordable, convenient broadband services, and everybody, after some discussion, although it wasn't quite as unanimous, also agreed that we shouldn't have the city picking a technology, the pace of change is too fast, and say, okay, we're going to put up Wi-Fi towers, and too bad if WiMAX comes along, we're going to stay with Wi-Fi, or something like that.
Right.
And then the most contentious final consensus agreement was that given the city of Los Angeles' size, its topography, its financial status, and a whole host of reasons, for the city of L.A., without speaking to the issue generally, that the best way to accomplish the goal that everybody could agree on, which was this affordable, convenient broadband, would have to be done in public-private partnerships. And so when we went through the roles, as you called it, the models, and we called it the models, for city's work, we therefore said we are not in favor of a model in which the city steps back and does nothing and lets the market hopefully work. But we also weren't in favor of the city as the retail provider of such services.
Okay, but between those two extremes, let me try to focus the discussion by raising this question. People who can afford it and live in places where other people who can afford it live, mm-hmm. it seems to me, have all the broadband they need and the possibility of getting more into infinite ranges of movies downloaded in seconds.
Right.
And people who live in areas where they have low incomes and their neighbors have low incomes may have less access and can't afford it if they did, and don't have it because they can't afford it, and the
right.
private sector hasn't built it up there. If that's just left alone, what would happen, and what's the argument for not just leaving it alone?
Well, we in fact don't agree that you should be just left alone. We
right.
specifically rejected that model.
Right.
And the argument for not leaving it alone is that while it may be true that over time, in the long run, eventually broadband might be available everywhere at affordable rates if you just let the market work itself through its opportunities on a sequential basis.
Right.
But as Keynes said very famously once, in the long run, we're all dead.
Right.
And so the real issue is how much equity of access and convenience should the city focus on,
right,
for its both its residents and its visitors.
Okay, well, let me take that as the stepping off point for the next point then. This is a 30-page report, and there are complicated and elaborate discussions of these various models.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be a viable model to say that there ought to just be a broadband tax, essentially, to those who have, and take that money and use it to subsidize or give away access to those who don't?
It's a possible financing model, but it's not one that we think needs to be employed here, because the city has other leverage points besides taxation.
And right.
The one we focused quite a bit on was the permitting process.
Right.
And even though some members of the industry objected, in fact, one industry ended up not signing off on the report, not
right.
necessarily over this issue, but
right.
The fact of the matter is that the city can use its permitting process to say, we'll make it easy for you to come in and offer broadband in marketplace areas where you can charge what you want, people will pay it, they got the money, it's all fine, let's go.
Right.
But anybody who wants to do that can get a permit, that's fine. If you want a really fast permit, how about contributing to the city that you want to do business in by equally putting up some, making use of our access and so-called space, facilities really, in areas that you might not get to right away. And that's where we actually recommend the city go, is first of all, take care of a lot of public places themselves, encourage it, develop it, put it out there, use it as a spur. That's why we were at Pershing Square today, where they've begun to do that for Pershing Square. It's launched its official service. They have a hotspot there. But to not only do that, but also use the permitting process as leverage to make sure that the marketplace operates in a way that takes care of what economists would call the externalities of the service and make sure it's delivered for the common good. And you can do that in a permitting process, and you can also take the next step, which the report talks about in terms of models, and that is actually provide a wholesale service, such as Philadelphia is contemplating, where the city makes available broadband services to anyone who wants to buy them wholesale and resell them retail.
Okay, well, part of the problem in whatever model is employed has to do with knowing just exactly what the deployment of broadband opportunities is at
right.
any particular time. The study, the report, the launch report calls for that kind of survey. You didn't do that as part of the panel?
The time frame we had for the panel's work and the nature of the people we had on the panel were such that all we could point out was, before you do a plan, you might want to know where you're starting from.
Right.
We help define where you want to go, which is a very important part of a plan. The other point on the map you want to have is the starting point as
right.
well as the end point. And so some of our recommendations say, let's get this controversy settled. Where is broadband affordable? Where is it accessible? Where is it missing? Where is it missing in the city? Let's understand that as we get started on then making selective investments and selective pushes to get not just necessarily investments, but pushing the private sector to specific places. Let's understand what those places are,
okay.
and where they are, and what they should be.
Let me try to bring in another dimension of this to elucidate this a little further. I did a long interview, actually two interviews, with the president of a company called Brand X in Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
His company is in the Supreme Court now with a case pending against the FCC, arguing that his small ISP ought to be able to use cable lines to provide ISP service to users.
Mm.
And the cable companies don't want to do that, and the FCC is on their side, and he's arguing that case. I also did an interview with a commissioner of the California Public Utilities Commission a few days ago, Susan Kennedy,
mm-hmm.
who is arguing that the FCC and not the state of California or any other state ought to determine what voice over IP regulatory policy is.
Mm-hmm.
All of this, to me, points to an emerging broadband environment in which Verizon, SBC, and depending on who buys MCI, Quest or not, and as the cable companies consolidate, with Adelphia being divided up between Comcast and Time Warner, we're down to maybe three phone companies, three cable companies.
The satellite provider.
And a satellite provider, which isn't really a good way to get broadband, it seems to me.
No, not at the moment.
Who fight each other in a duopoly situation wherever there's a market that they think they both want, and who unite together on the litigation, legislation, fronts to keep other providers out. They almost kept Philadelphia out of the market
right here.
So that seems to me the private sector environment right now, which is duopoly everywhere, and prices around $26 to $30 a month for broadband.
Well, we have.
Do you agree with that analysis? And is that something that you think that the city needs to address?
One of the recommendations that we made out of the eight specifically talks about the need for the city to become both a national as well as a local champion of these types of technologies that are coming down the pike. And
Wi-Fi, WiMAX, wireless technologies.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason that it does need to be a champion is for many of the reasons that you just cited in terms of developing consolidation trends in the marketplace,
right,
and the need for a national perspective to have the right kind of approach for investment purposes. But in the course of being that advocate, there are leverage points. The city doesn't come to the table begging. It has, as you know, in the city of L.A., a significant amount of fiber that can be used to connect networks in so-called backhaul environments that not all cities have.
Right.
Secondly, all cities have the opportunity, and Los Angeles is a particular interest in providing yet a third method of acquiring broadband, not through cable, not through
DSL,
but over power lines.
Well,
city has, you know, a proprietary department.
Right. I don't want to sound like I'm really covering the waterfront here, but I've done more than everyone else on the question of RFI interference in BPL,
mm-hmm.
and it looks to me like the ham radio operators are going to, unless the FCC, of course, if it has some time left over from regulating voice over IP, it's not going to be viable.
Well, the FCC is working hard with actually the president's encouragement to settle those issues.
Right.
But the point is that the more the city's voice is heard,
right,
on the need for diversity of selection,
right,
for broadband, and the more likely it is that the consumers will be represented appropriately.
Okay, well, that's what I want to ask, because if it sounds like you pretty much agree with my sketch of the competitive or non-competitive or duopolistic environment, it would seem to me, and this is what seems to be accepted by the people in Philadelphia, in the city who are doing Wireless Philadelphia, is that the only way that duopoly can be confronted and prices can be brought down is for the city to get actively in the process of creating that third way, that third alternative, which would be a municipally built system that could be managed by individual ISPs, large or small, but that absent a municipal effort to invest in a third infrastructure, we're stuck with a duopoly.
Yeah, I'm not sure we're stuck with a duopoly. There's no question that we're going to be looking at an oligopolistic environment unless these technologies are encouraged. That's absolutely true, and our report says that the only reason for even writing this report is that the de jure and de facto oligopolies that currently exist are subject to pressure from technologies that allow you to deploy this kind of service for a lot less money, such as Wi-Fi.
Right, but if there's
and the city therefore has to play an active role, but the original question was, well, what role should that be?
Right.
And the answer is, well, first of all, it might want to be a direct provider in public spaces. Second of all, it might want to be a wholesale provider, as Philadelphia is doing, and as you've talked about.
Right.
Third, it absolutely should be using its permitting process to leverage this. And fourth, it ought to be out there jawboning and making sure that the context of future telecommunications policy in the country encourages this sort of thing.
Well,
if you do all those things and you do them well over the next 5 years, the rest of the problem sort of takes care of itself, because the technology becomes cheaper and cheaper, the demand goes up and up, and the marketplace responds.
Well, it would seem to me that if that happened, if the technology got really good, that private funding would find its way into building out Wi-Fi networks.
We're at a point where in the not-too-distant future, neighborhood consuls could fund their own Wi-Fi systems if they wanted to.
Yeah, well, I've been suggesting they do that for at least a year, and I can't even get them, my own neighborhood council to return my phone call. So I don't see how...
I'm not saying they will. I'm saying it's
Oh, it's a great idea. It's a great idea that I've suggested over and over again with no effect.
And so, that's not the city. That could be just a group of people getting together in the neighborhood and saying, this is what our neighborhood needs.
Toronto Networks have told me if I want to put a Wi-Fi radio on my balcony, they'll manage it for me.
There you are.
But I'd have to stay up all night to manage.
Well,
to
don't forget, that's not a small point. The other reason for caution here in terms of direct city involvement
right.
is that the operational maintenance costs are usually end up being 80-90% of the cost.
Right.
So people can talk about, you know, easy deployment, and that's absolutely true. But the city making a commitment to continue to spend taxpayer dollars for now and into the future to maintain a network that may no longer be necessary or useful
right.
is a big decision. And so we've said, let's do this one step at a time, in phases, over 5 years. Let's work towards the goal. Let's try a bunch of different ways of getting to the goal. And as we experience what works and which technologies work, then let's continue to move ahead as long as we're clear about the goal.
Okay. Let's do one more go-around about this duopoly problem, and then move on to some other points. Mm-hmm. Do you feel, then, that those incremental steps that you mentioned will be sufficient to provide serious competition to the duopoly to the extent that it would lower its prices?
Well, I can't speak to what it would end up doing in terms of price.
Right.
Because they may instead decide to compete on service.
Right.
And service differentiation, well. But it would certainly enhance competition.
But it seemed that in every case that the duopolists will make promise, for example, most recently about fiber optics, that they're going to build fiber to the home, fiber to the neighborhood, fiber to the node, all of these things, and deliver astronomically fast speeds, like delivering movies in seconds. And it seems to me that that's going to they're going to go after the high income residential market. They're going to go after the business market, all through the private sector, and deliver speeds that will serve whatever purpose any of those residents or business people want to serve, and that will essentially then leave the have-nots without again.
Well, again, I it is totally possible that scenario that you've sketched out is the experience of the next couple of years,
right.
And that's why it's important for the city to take some steps to change that direction.
Right, but
it's not clear.
Yeah.
It's not clear that in the long run,
right.
the marketplace won't be one served instead by a focus on heavy volume, low cost users. For instance, in the wireless world, and we keep talking about DSL and cable, but
right.
as our wireless industry representative on the panel kept pointing out, look, you can get on a cell phone today and get most of these services for your cell phone subscription, and you can do so even more so with the coming generation
right.
of cell phones.
Well, we haven't talked about right, and
so that's yet a third piece of the puzzle in terms of duopolies or not.
Well, sure, but the EVDO, which delivers broadband over cellular networks.
Mm-hmm.
Is available now from Verizon. It will soon be available from Sprint.
Right.
Presumably, T-Mobile will get there, and we're back to another oligopoly.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you've got four or five cellular providers, so that's hard to characterize as an oligopoly. But even if you did,
right.
inside that oligopoly is a company, one of the fastest growing ones, called Virgin Mobile.
Yeah.
And their market focus. You want to talk about, you know, focus on people without a lot of money.
Right.
Their focus is on teenage users who prepay their usage because they don't have any credit.
All right. Well, maybe.
Now, they're
maybe
growing like crazy because they're focused on that market.
Okay. Well, maybe Virgin Mobile. I wasn't aware of the Virgin Mobile entrant into the market, and it could be that you're right. But they're going to do that to make money for themselves, not
yes.
to perform a public service.
Yes. And I think that's what we're saying, is that this market, the demand for the service and the price of delivering it is such
right.
that there will be more and more market that the private sector is likely to address
right.
over these 5 years.
Then what's the need? Then what's the need
then
for the city,
to
do anything?
And the answer is, first of all, the city right now needs to spur those kind of investments. But it seems by creating hotspots, by doing permitting process things, by doing some of the stuff that Philadelphia is thinking about doing, doing all those things now.
Right.
And then assessing what the impact is. If that spurs the private sector into further deployment and further access so that everybody has affordable, it's terrific. Remember, the private sector signed off on this report. The incumbent providers, outside of one industry, said, yeah, this is right. This is the way we ought to go about this. The city has a role to play. We have a role to play. Let's all get this done and take care of everybody's needs.
Okay. Well, it turns out I wanted to address the digital divide question.
Yes.
But, of course, these things are so interrelated that this is really just another side of the same question.
Exactly.
And the phrase that appears in the document several times is bridging the gap between bridging the digital divide and leveling up the digital divide.
Right.
What is leveling up the digital divide, and how's that different than bridging it, and how does that figure into what you're trying to do?
Leveling up the digital divide says, can we get the bottom of the problem, more service, so that they're closer to the rest of the people, without necessarily using public funds to get them all the way over the bridge? And let me be explicit rather than theoretical about it.
Okay.
We addressed issues in our report of accessibility and affordability.
Right.
And to some degree, convenience.
Right.
But there are other aspects of the digital divide which include things like, well, what about the device?
That's right. What about the device?
And what about the user's ability to
use it? Yes.
By the way, what about the quality of service once they do get it? Is it going to be the same?
Right.
And what we said was, look, within the next 5 years, within the scope of the technologies we've been asked to assess, you're not going to find the silver bullet or the holy grail that solves all digital divide issues. But you can use these technologies to take care of the fundamentals, which is convenience, access, and affordability.
Well, what does that mean in practice, exactly?
In practice, it means, to start with, everybody ought to be able to walk into a public building, and if they have a device that accesses the internet, be able to use it.
But public buildings, okay.
And that's not a long-term solution, because eventually people will not want to have to go somewhere else to get on the net. Right?
I think a lot of people already feel that way.
Exactly, and more people will, and our report talks about that.
Right.
But it's a heck of a first step, because what does it do? If it helps new people experience it, it begins to take care of the education, training, and other issues, and besides which, the device is free. It's sitting at your public library. So you begin to address that. Now, in the course of 5 years, you got to do more than that.
Well,
but doing more than that means you have to do the study, you have to, of where broadband is not available, you have to have a specific plan for each geographical area, how it's going to become available, so then it doesn't matter that people have to walk somewhere, because they never have to.
Okay.
But that's a longer-term proposition.
In terms of the digital divide, which is really just all the statistics show from the beginning until now, that the digital divide is a shadow of the economic and social disparities in the United States.
And in the city.
And in cities and so on. That there are families that have, as much as Michael Powell does when he goes around and does an exhibition, in their homes, and that they're just pumping in the bits and wirelessly commuting and traveling around and using all of that. And there are people who just aren't doing that.
Right.
And the people who are doing it already, to those who have, much is given, and those who have little are getting less. And I'm wondering whether, again, since there are so many constraints on what the city can do to say, short of saying this is a public need, people who don't have it should get it, which I think sounds like socialism, and which is not hasn't been popular in Los Angeles since the 20s or before. And the ones who have the access now are able to raise their children, educate their children in ways that they're constantly using this. They're using it to leverage their other resources to constantly increase their wealth and their access to more of this technology and so on, whereas there's in a positive feedback loop, where there's a negative feedback loop in poorer areas. And apart from the cost of the broadband, there's the device, then there's the training, and there's the usability that you've been talking about. I find it hard to imagine, even with a socialistic commitment by the city to do that, that it could level up at all, because the people at the top of the heap are constantly rising higher. Any comments about that?
My feeling is that you will always have some disparity
right
in a market-driven
environment, society, environment, economy. Yeah. Right, sure.
And what you're really trying to figure out is how can we spend the resources we have most effectively to narrow that difference.
Well, but how can you narrow that difference if the people who are at the top of the heap are constantly rising at accelerating rates, and absent a very big public investment in the low in, I mean really education. I mean that's something that the whole country and California and Los Angeles are fighting about right now. Money for education, and to the extent that the technology is something that would facilitate that, it's just another part of the same question. Should those who have money, access, and equipment have some of it taken away from them by government and have it given to other people so that they can possibly raise themselves up relative to the people who have the most?
Yeah,
it's all part of this. It seems to me it's all part of the same tax, education, decision making.
Well, but what you're
issue,
arguing, what you're arguing for is a redistribution solution.
Well, I'm not arguing for it. I'm trying to raise it as an issue.
Yeah, I don't. Our panel would not be in favor of that.
Well,
because
but
we don't think that kind of drastic step is necessary. Either in the short run or as far as we can see on the technological trends in the long run.
Because you believe the technological trends and the existing economic relationships will raise the a rising tide lifts all boats.
Yes, a rising tide will lift all boats, but there's two tides at work here.
Right.
You have not only a rising tide of customer interest, which
right.
creates people who want to sell to customers,
right.
but you also have a continuously declining cost, which allows it to become more and more affordable,
well,
so the want can be fulfilled.
Moore's Law is certainly a law that I completely support,
okay.
and which is
so
it can't
are.
Be repealed by the Supreme Court.
Exactly.
But even given that, so you're but even the cliche of rising tide raises all boats. If you've got a yacht and you've got a skiff with holes in it, you're going to be risen a lot higher by in the yacht than you are in the skiff with holes. And so, I mean, obviously it's not within the purview of this panel to,
right.
to reduce economic inequity in the United States.
Right.
But what I'm asking you is whether or not you think that the steps that you've outlined will have a significant impact on that, or whether really, I mean, the city, it doesn't have extra money. It doesn't have $10 billion
exactly.
to invest in something.
It doesn't have the money.
But Sprint does, and SBC does, and they are investing it.
Yeah.
And they're investing it where they think in the long run it'll bring them the most return on their investment.
Which is pretty much what they have to do if they want to keep on having money.
Right? That's right. And so what I'm saying is that the city just seems like a pipsqueak here with Charles Atlas is running around. and whether it's going to be able to do anything at all significant, even with a drastic commitment, and it sounds like, from what I've seen in the report, that it's so constrained that it isn't going to make a drastic commitment. That's the fundamental question, I guess, I'd like you to address.
I think we made some very significant and important recommendations to get us over 5 years to the point where everybody can have affordable, convenient access to the net. I don't think we can do that by running a program that is considered to be hostile or a real threat to the business viability of the people already providing the service. That
okay.
would work against our goal.
Right.
What
right.
we tried to do was say, okay, since we all share the same goal, and since we want you to continue to invest in the city,
right.
how about the city does these things as well?
Right.
And not necessarily, you know, as a dependent member of the team,
right.
but clearly a player on the team, and everybody said, yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay, but so then it's clear then that what the city is not intending to do under this plan is to set itself up in competition to the people, the companies that charge $26 a month for broadband service, and say we're going to provide, because it sounds like what Philadelphia is trying to do. That's why Verizon tried to stop them. They're going to say if we can offer a comparable residential broadband service for $15 or $10 a month, why go with Verizon and pay $25?
Well, I think the city of Philadelphia is not planning on doing that. Now, our understanding of what the city of Philadelphia is planning on doing is creating a wholesale offering.
Right, a wholesale offering, but they right. That's right.
That providers are free to
that's right.
mark up and retail as other retailers do at a price that they decide.
Exactly right. But the upshot of that is intended to bring the price point for basic broadband down to $15.
Well, that might happen.
Right.
As we point out in the report, $15 is an interesting price point that may or may not be achievable.
Okay.
The fact of the matter is we don't argue against the Philadelphia model in the report.
Right.
We see it as one of the models the city ought to explore.
Okay. Let's focus on, as we wrap up here, on the political timetable for this. You've issued this report. There's a mayoral election. This was a report that was commissioned by Mayor Hahn.
Yeah, 6 months ago, yeah.
6 months ago. Now, Mayor Hahn may or may not serve another term as mayor. What impact, if any, on these plans will there be if Mayor Hahn is reelected to another term or if Antonio Villaraigosa takes over as mayor?
Well, it's total speculation at this point since we don't know who the winner is going to be.
Right.
We did have Councilwoman Perry there today who was speaking eloquently and intelligently about the importance of these kinds of technologies.
Right.
So our hope is that the council will take a look at this report. And since the council continues basically with maybe one change from what we have, that there'll be a continuous interest in this process regardless of who's mayor and who's on the council, because it'll be important to the future of the city of Los Angeles. But our report was not politically influenced by the mayor, nor do I think there's anything there that would necessarily give he or his current rival a reason to disagree.
Okay, well, what has to happen on the political side for your recommendations to be implemented?
Well, from this point, having delivered it to the mayor, we have to have the mayor say, yes, I accept, and all that sort of thing.
Well, he at least said he received it.
He said, I got it. I got the email. Sent from the Pershing Wi-Fi place. But I think at that point, then, we need to go to the mayor would need to develop the specific implementation actions which for each recommendation, which we specifically said we were not going to do because that was beyond the panel's.
Right, so is the mayor going to do that or the city council going to do that?
Well, either of them could do it or they could do it in partnership, but obviously given the political environment, none of that's going to happen until we know what the next incumbent administration
is. So at that point, do you expect that you and other panel members will go in front of the council and say, here's our recommendation, we'd like you to pass ordinances to implement?
Right, and who wants to champion this kind of thing and so forth.
Do you see any particular opposition or strong champions on the council for this?
Well, again, Councilwoman Perry clearly signaled her interest both publicly and privately today, and there are other members of the council who have expressed an interest in technology solutions. I think we'll have to wait and see how the report's received before we know who wants to step up front.
Okay, now an important part of the report says not only does Los Angeles need to be a leader in this area, but it needs to be seen as a leader in this area. I asked Carla McDonald, who engineered the Pershing Wi-Fi output, whether he thought that things had moved from a condition where early adopters are get an advantage to a situation where late adopters are going to be at a disadvantage. Is the situation still at a point where Los Angeles can attract business and residents, assuming that those are things that it wants to do, by implementing this in a accelerated way, or do you think it really has to do it in order to keep people from migrating to other places? Again, given that, assuming that that's something that we don't want to have happen.
I think it will be a competitive necessity in the future. I think today it's a competitive advantage if it's done.
You think it's still an advantage? Los Angeles can still advantage itself by doing this?
Yeah, I think so.
Would it advantage itself better if it did it faster?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, on that score, I mean, I think the city of New York announced its plan just a couple days ago.
Right. Well, it's the Big Orange versus the Big Apple again.
There you go.
And we'll see what happens in that
exactly.
competition. Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for taking a half hour
to
talk to us about this, and we'll see what happens going forward.
I look forward to being part of the debate.
Okay. Good. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You've been listening to a conversation on Unwired LA and California Politics Day with Morley Winograd, the director of the panel established by Mayor Hahn to look into Wi-Fi for Los Angeles. If you enjoyed this program, you can take the URL that you used to get here and send it to a friend or several friends or business associates or strangers and suggest that they listen too. The more people who listen, the more effect it'll have, and we certainly will appreciate that here at Utopia Media. Thanks again for listening, and that's all we have to say today. Thanks a lot. Bye.